You may have seen the show. Musician and historian Rick Benjamin from Lewisburg was featured in an episode of the popular PBS television series Great Performances, which aired nationwide on April 17th. The program, titled Now Hear This, Everyone Loves Joplin, was an hour-long exploration of the music of composer Scott Joplin. It featured Benjamin performing and discussing Joplin's music, both at the piano and conducting his Paragon Ragtime Orchestra. We're hearing them here. Much of the show was filmed in Lewisburg and Selins Grove, and during the show, there were close-ups of violist Amy Iwazumi of the Wyoming Valley, who, with violinist John Vida, often tour and play with Lewisburg's Paragon Ragtime Orchestra, most recently in a matinee screening of Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush at the historic Brook Theater in Bound Brook, New Jersey. No strangers, then, to ragtime. John and Amy are co-founders of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, now marking its 10th anniversary. And to celebrate a decade of presenting chamber music concerts with Brahms and Beethoven and Mozart, contemporary composer Wan Chu Kay, and many others, they've chosen a very special work that teases us with ragtime. Ragtime a la Igor Stravinsky. Musicologist Richard Taruskin explains, the very first requirement of jazz, vintage 1918, was a steady common time pulsation against which the melodic syncopations could rebound. What makes these syncopations intelligible and delightful is absolute certainty as to what is on the beat and what is off. What makes Stravinsky's rhythm fascinating and delightful, by contrast, is its metrical ambiguity. That is, the doubts the composer continually and deliberately sows precisely about the certainty that jazz takes for granted. Further, the jazz or ragtime pulse is a spacious, roomy thing that allows for, indeed depends on, subdivision. The characteristic ragtime syncopation is not so much the stressing of a weak beat or the suppression of a strong one, but rather the placement of the accents on the weak, smaller units of the beat. These syncopations, fooling around with the beat in professional slang, are usually confined to patterns of no more than one or two measures, and are often reiterated through melodic sequences that only enhance the absolute regularity of the underlying 4 square meter. Scott Joplin's didactic Etudes, The School of Ragtime, 6 exercises for piano from 1908, ideally illustrate all of these points. Taruskin asks us to compare the little ragtime from Stravinsky's L'Histoire du Soldat with Joplin. It begins faithfully enough to the model, and then 9 measures are in regular meter and rhythms. By the 10th measure of L'Histoire ragtime, the jazz idiom has been decisively challenged by an intruder in the form of a bar that effectively derails the all-important downbeat pattern. From there to the end, it is a war between the forces of jazz regularity and those of Stravinskyan disruption. Thank you. The foreign element of jazz here may have irritated the Stravinskian rhythmic organism into producing a musical pearl in L'Histoire Ragtime, yet it is precisely the interplay between jazz and non-jazz that sustains lively musical interest here. Something another work by Stravinsky doesn't have. The Ragtime for 11 instruments notably lacks this. As wittily observed in one of the last interviews Stravinsky did, he said, "Whereas the Ragtime in L'Histoire is as smoothly integrated as a minuet in Mozart, the one for the 11 instruments is as dated as a raccoon coat." That from Stravinsky and the Russian Traditions by Richard Taruskin. And that's only 2 short minutes of music that we'll delight in when we experience The Soldier's Tale, L'Histoire du Soldat, this Friday evening. L'Histoire was described in 1918 as a work to be read, played, and danced. So we'll hear 7 remarkable musicians who love the piece coming from far and wide to join John and Amy in celebrating the 10th anniversary of NEPA CMS. Also, Keisuke Hoashi, who is a Hollywood actor returning to northeastern Pennsylvania to take the part of the narrator. There will be a life-size puppet representing the devil in the tale, and a cast of dancers and performers directed by Jason Sherry, and the choreography is by Bernadine Voitko, both of Wyoming Seminary. That's The Soldier's Tale, this Friday, May 15th at 7 p.m. at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts in Kingston, and admission is free. John Vida and Amy Iwazumi paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the special musical theatrical event and to reflect on the history of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, NEPA CMS, that they founded a decade ago.
10 years kind of goes by pretty quickly, and as we're saying, you know, we have a lot of great memories from over the years. I vividly, though, remember our very first concert. We played music for 2, 3, and 4. I think that was even in the title.
That
of the concert,
was the title.
Right? Yeah. And one of my former students actually was playing with us, and who's since gone on to, you know, have a really successful career. But there were slightly more people in the audience than on stage. I think there were 5 people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, you know, one of them was my father, so that doesn't count. But it's amazing to see how it's grown over the years. And, you know, thinking about our upcoming performance, we have at this point over 100 reservations. So we've gone from 4 people, 5 people in the audience to an audience of over 100, and probably even more when we get to Friday.
You had your home base in those early days, but you've taken to traveling now to present concerts here and there.
Yeah, we've gone from as far south as, what, Bethlehem, I think, PA, mm-hmm. and we've been regularly going up to Montrose to perform and also work with the students up there. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's diversification, I guess.
You just mentioned students, John, and as the years have gone on, you've actively invited students to be part of the season as apprentices or interns. I know brave ones have come here to the studios to play for us. And it's not just technique that you're teaching.
Yeah, and just learning to work with each other. I think chamber music can be a very different experience, especially if they're only used to playing in band or orchestra, because they have a conductor in front of them telling them what to do. Whereas if, let's say, it's a string quartet, then they have to talk to each other and problem solve and talk about their goals. So it's a very different skill set.
And also with education, you know, our mission, I see it as, is education not just for children, not just for students, but I think for the, you know, general public, for the people of northeastern Pennsylvania. You know, every concert, we inevitably have somebody that's never experienced chamber music and doesn't quite understand what that even means. Or if they have had experience with, say, a string quartet, it's been at, you know, their friend's wedding or their wedding, you know, somebody playing music in the background. And we feel that it's part of our mission also to just open the horizons of people's minds to what chamber music is, preconceived notions, and you know that goes to repertoire as well. Do you remember offhand how many pieces we've performed?
Oh, hundreds.
Yeah, I think it was something 150 at least pieces that we've performed over these 10 years, and with very few exceptions, actually, we haven't repeated repertoire.
Mm-hmm. And we've had a world premiere 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yep. With Wen Choke, his piano quintet.
Mm-hmm. And we recently, in our March concert, played a piece by Cerrone. It was written for a clarinet quintet. And there were some techniques in there that might be foreign to people who are used to just the classics. But people really liked it. Audience members came up to us and said it really was evocative and it sounded like this and that. They had all this imagery in their head and they really liked it.
You really do open our ears to the sounds of freshly composed works. But really, when you bring us Brahms and Beethoven and all the rest, we hear those pieces differently when we are listening to them in person, don't we?
Indeed, yeah. It's, you know, take, for example, something like, and we were discussing this on our ride here, actually, the Dvorak American String Quartet. Famous piece, you hear a lot, you know, maybe on the radio or in different contexts, but how often do you actually hear that in person? If you're lucky, you know, you can go to maybe New York, Philadelphia, or you can come to a NEPA CMS concert and hear it. Same, you know, high world-class level, but with a lot less driving.
You too have played all over the country and outside of the country, and you make friends with musicians wherever you go. And if you click with them, you often invite them to come perform with you here.
Yeah, absolutely. And chamber music is all about collaboration. So, you know, if you want to play a septet, for example, you need seven people that can play the different instrument combinations.
Right, and they all have to be at a really high level because with our projects, we usually have a couple of days to rehearse, put them together, and then we're immediately performing. And that's certainly going to be the case for the upcoming Stravinsky project, where we have people coming from literally across the country to play.
As you said at the start, John, time flew, surely. But when you realized that your 10th anniversary was coming up, how did you want to mark the occasion?
We wanted, I think, to do something big, do something special, do something challenging, but also do something that involved the community. And the Stravinsky is an ideal piece for that because not only is it great music, but it also lends itself well to collaboration because there's narration involved and you can expand that to include dancers. We're using some of the students at Wyoming Seminary. One in particular is interested in puppetry and she's making a life-size puppet of the devil. She sent me some pictures last night. They look pretty cool.
Well, tell us then something about the piece, its title, how it came about.
In English, The Soldier's Tale in French.
L'histoire du soldat.
It's a really special, interesting piece, product certainly of its time and place. It was conceived in 1917, written in 1918, while Stravinsky was in Switzerland. In collaboration with Ramuz, the Swiss writer, he created this piece that could be portable. And with seven players, what he's basically done is taking a full orchestra and condensed it down to its bare minimum. So for example, there's representations of each of the instrument families, one in the high and one in the low register. So we have the clarinet, which is the woodwind, the high woodwind. Then we have the bassoon. For brass, we have trumpet or cornet actually, and trombone. And for strings, we have violin and double bass. And then of course we need percussion. So that's included as well. And I think he wrote that this way so that it could be, like I said, portable. You could stage this work kind of anywhere, actually. And just financially, too, it's a lot cheaper to produce something with seven instruments than it is with 70.
Did you give each other a high five when you landed on The Soldier's Tale?
Yeah, and actually, it was in, I think we were in Puerto Rico for another music festival that we did with our trumpeter, Marty Hodel, who's coming to play. We met him there, and he's a fantastic trumpet player. And we we had been chatting, and Amy and I had kind of, I think, been throwing things around in our head about, you know, what we wanted to do for this season. And we started talking to Marty, and it turns out that he did his DMA project dissertation on Soldier's Tale when he was at Eastman. And so I said, well, of course you have to come and play this with us then. And it turns out actually that all but one of the players has a connection with Eastman as well. So we're all graduates. And then, of course, J.B. Vandermark, James Vandermark, he's just finishing his last year. He's retiring this year as double bass professor at Eastman. And here's another connection. I guess the last time I performed the Stravinsky, J.B. was doing the narration and it was at Eastman.
Talk with us just a bit more about the music itself. Listeners may recognize the march, for example.
You know, I've always been fascinated by Stravinsky's music. I've played The Soldier's Tale twice now, once in my undergrad, and actually the first time without a conductor too, and again in my master's. I studied with my teacher, Zvi Zeitlin, who actually went on tour with Stravinsky playing his concerto. So I learned the duo concertante with him, and you know, Stravinsky's kind of, I've always seen him as like one of my musical relatives, I guess, because I have such a connection there. But whenever I play a piece by Stravinsky, it's always fun and challenging to sort it out, because it is a bit like a puzzle. And specifically in The Soldier's Tale, as you said, there's a march, but there's also a tango, there's a waltz, and there's a ragtime. Very loosely so, though, because, you know, there's elements of the march and those other dances, but Stravinsky has a way of writing it so that he completely upends your expectation of what a march or waltz or ragtime or a tango is. Just rhythmically, it has like this limp to it. So you think you're in one spot, but then immediately you're in another spot, and then by three or four bars in, you're completely lost as to where the beat is.
Well, speaking about being lost, you mentioned the first time you performed The Soldier's Tale, it was without a conductor. Will you have a conductor for this performance?
So what is our unofficial, maybe we should make it our official motto.
We actually have t-shirts and mugs that have our logo and our motto, which is no conductor necessary.
Absolutely not. No conductor. Not to offend any conductors out there, because of course my father is one.
Even if we only hear a snatch, we get a sense that the piece is rhythm-driven, and that's not just in the march.
Yeah, it is certainly rhythmically driven, and Stravinsky kind of did to rhythm what Schoenberg did for tonality, right? The emancipation of rhythm, I guess, with this. However, there are kind of germs in the music that come back, and they are pretty catchy, actually. And I do think you come away from it with some earworms, for lack of a better term.
Your part, John, as the soldier's violin, is front and center in the work. Is it any different for you than playing a sonata, or are you in any way inhabiting a character of sorts?
So with the story, Joseph is the soldier who plays the violin and trades his violin to the devil for a book that can, you know, tell the future and give him limitless riches. So I guess the violin is the devil, is Joseph at times. However, I don't think it really changes the way I actually play the instrument, except for one instance in there where I do have to make some scratchy sounds, but that's not actually in the score.
And so tell us, who will be joining you for the performance?
Oh, starting in order. Clarinet will be Nuno Antunes. He has played with us in the past. Cara Lamour is the bassoonist. Martin Holdel is cornet player. Rebecca Chabotari from Williamsport will be playing the trombone.
James Vandermark on bass. And then Baljinder Sekhon, who's a composer, actually, and professor at Penn State University. He'll be playing percussion.
Now it's time for us to bring in Keisuke Hoashi, who has the role of the narrator. He's based in Hollywood, where he is an actor, a writer, an educator, a voiceover artist, and he is a musician as well. In speaking with him by phone, we asked him why he's coming across the country to take the part of the narrator and whether he's done it before.
I've actually never done it before. I used to attend the Crane School of Music as a trumpeter, and this was one of the audition pieces for, I believe, my junior year. And it was so difficult, I think I said, you know, I'm not going to audition for that. I'm just not good enough to play this. But I'm coming back because, well, I have a connection to the area. I used to be one of the charter members of the Encore Music Camp of Pennsylvania when Wilkes College was Wilkes College back in the 80s. John's father apparently worked there a year after I left, and John apparently was also there, but I think I'm about like 70 years older than John, so I'm afraid I don't remember him being quite that young. But John and Amy asked me to come back to do it, and I have so many wonderful memories of that area, primarily of pizza, because, you know, when you're a camp counselor, you really got to become an expert on the pizza in the area.
It's interesting you say that, KSK. One of the traditions we've developed over the past 10 years of NEPA CMS is introducing all of our guest artists to the great pizza debate in the area. Is it the bowling alley or is it Pizza Perfect?
How long can you stay, KSK?
As long as I need to have every piece of pizza in every section in town.
Well, we've saved the telling of the story for you. Do you read French? Do you know French? Or have you just been working with the English translation?
Well, I studied French in junior high school, and I've put it away for decades since then, but I've retained enough to be able to read about 60% of the original libretto, which has been extremely helpful.
Please, if you will, just give us the thumbnail of the story, and then we'll want to know what you're delighted about.
Well, the original story is based on a Russian folktale from 1918. This is The Soldier's Tale, which has been translated and adapted in so many ways. The most famous in America, I believe, is that piece, The Devil Went Down to Georgia? I forgot who made that, but there's a lot of fiddling going on back in the 1970s, I suppose. But the theme is a Faustian bargain. You know, the old German legend of Dr. Faust trading his soul to the devil at Mephistopheles in order to have it all for 1 year, and then the devil gets his soul for the rest of eternity. Faustian bargains are very bad bargains, but they feel good in the moment. This piece has always been considered one of the most challenging and highest level things that you can do as a musician. Like I said, when I was a trumpet player, I didn't feel up to it. I didn't feel I was good enough to do this. However, as an actor, I feel far, far more confident in my skills to rise up to the occasion here. And when John asked me to do this, I was very excited by it, but I also wanted the opportunity to rewrite the libretto to a more modern feel, primarily because the recordings, well, it was written in 1918, so it is quite dated to our 21st century ears. And however, we have had permission directly from the composer and the librettist, Stravinsky and Ramuz, directly by the fact that there's been a long history of rewrites and reimaginings of this. Currently, there's recordings by Roger Waters and Jeremy Irons, and they have changed the original text considerably, sometimes even changing the locations and the relationships and even names of the characters. So I felt okay about changing this original. And what I wanted to do, however, because since I am an ex-musician, I wanted to keep the spirit of the original intact, because I greatly, greatly respect the music. Stravinsky, we used to call him a madman, one of the Russian madmen composers. And we loved playing that stuff back in college and high school. But I figured what I can do here is I can add my perspective as an actor and screenwriter. I've been in Hollywood for the past 3 decades, and I have a lot of experience in both those fields at this point. And I really wanted to strengthen the things that I thought needed strengthening. Specifically, I wanted the characters to do more, to be more active in the story, and I wanted them to feel more. I wanted the devil to be greedier. I wanted Joseph to be more in love with his family. And I wanted to give them actual actions rather than a passive storytelling type of thing, which was more common back in the early 1900s. And finally, I had the help here of a group of professional Hollywood screenwriters to help me develop this libretto. And they were wonderful in giving their advice and their perspective. So it was like I had another century or two of experience to help me rewrite this libretto into something that I believe a modern audience will really enjoy.
Will there be moments of humor? Is it funny on its own, but perhaps the way you deliver the particular lines, your whole embodiment of the narrator role?
Absolutely. I grew up watching Bugs Bunny cartoons, and that's the kind of multi-layered humor that I always love to bring to a performance. So as a voiceover actor, I've been doing this for cool for a very long time as well. You've heard my voice. I've done Bob's Burgers. I've been in the Smurfs movie. I did the dubbing for both the recent Godzilla films that came out as well. So I have a lot of experience in voice acting, and I'll be doing multiple characters, and each one, I hope, is going to be utterly distinct from one another. I'm hoping that in any review from the audience afterwards, that they're all going to say, we couldn't tell that it was the same person doing all seven voices. And that will be my ultimate compliment that I could receive. But throughout, I also put in little Easter eggs for folks of all ages. There are references to Gershwin in there. There's reference to the Jetsons in there, which I'm hoping after rehearsal, it's not going to sound too weird. And John's not going to say, you know, I think we should take that out. But really, John, I'm really hoping that you're okay with it.
I'm sure. I trust your judgment.
You may regret that, but thank you.
As a narrator, you're relying on your vocal instrument, because that's your instrument, and your body's your instrument, of course. How will you dress as the narrator? Do you just have a coat and tie and spats? Just kidding. When we come to see you, what will we find?
Unfortunately, with seven different characters, it would still be it would be quite a challenge to differentiate them visually using, say, a prop like, you know, a pair of devil horns or a big floppy hat. I know Johnny Carson used to be great at doing this, where he did this whole routine in black and white TV, I think. It must have been from the 1950s, where he played several characters in a poker game, and at the end, all of them wound up shooting each other laughing. So there's not going to be any of that, but there will be physical transformations that I'll do. My posture will change significantly for each character, and as each character gets further and further into the story, those characteristics will become clearer and clearer, till I hope the audience will be able to just look up and say, oh, that's the devil, or that's Joseph, or that is the princess.
I can't wait to see the recording of that, because I'm not going to be able to pay attention to any of that, because I got a lot of notes to play.
Do you think we'll be sympathetic in any way to the devil?
Possibly. You know, I worked really hard at figuring out why he's so sadistic. And unfortunately, there's not a lot to like about this guy, but there is one small element that I think we can communicate, and that this creature is seemingly incapable of love and joy and all the things that we take for granted as part of the wonderful tapestry of being human. And the only vestige of pleasure that he can find is tricking people and stealing stuff from them and watching them writhe and be in anguish because they've lost what they truly loved. So there'll be maybe a little bit of understanding, because I hate to say it, but I think all of us have a little bit of that sadisticness within ourselves. Hopefully it doesn't express itself too much.
John told us that the story was conceived and Ramuz and Stravinsky came together, and it was wartime, World War I, 1917, 1918. Do you think that might have had some influence on the way they tell this story?
Well, I can't speak for the psychology, but I do know that technically speaking, it was a financially smart thing that they did. By creating this piece with only seven instruments, I believe, and a narrator and all the other pieces, the actors and the ballet section, all of that being optional, they created something which was financially easy to travel around the world with and to perform. So there's no need to hire a full orchestra. There's no need for a whole troupe of dancers. So that's just a purely technical aspect of it. There is a universality to the story of greed and always wanting more and the dangers of getting everything you ever wanted. So perhaps that is consistent with the era of the end of World War I, where the entire globe had been devastated.
John, have you two actually worked together in any way? You know each other, but have you worked together?
So in between Encore Music Camp and, you know, May 15th of this year, Keisuke, Amy, and I, we all worked at the New York Summer Music Festival in Oneonta for several years. And we spent our summers together for a couple of summers. But that's the last time I think we saw each other.
I believe so, yeah, because I've been living out in Hollywood all this time, and you were still in Northeast Pennsylvania back at home. And unfortunately, I had very little reason to come visiting the area until last year when we had a reunion for the Encore Music Camp from the 1980s, which was quite wonderful. But yeah, John and I worked together in Oneonta, just up the Susquehanna River from y'all. And that was between the years of, well, we began the camp in 2006, and my affiliation with them ended in 2012. So we had several years where I got to enjoy watching he and Amy perform.
What was your role in Oneonta?
Well, I was one of the co-founders of the camp. I had been invited to, this goes back a little bit further. Originally, as a kid, I went to music camp in Oneonta at the New York State Music Camp, run by Dr. Frederick Faye Swift. I attended there for a few years. Then I went to Encore in Wilkes-Barre for a couple of years after that, and then a long empty patch. And then in 2005, I was invited back to the original New York State Music Camp in Oneonta to be their musical theater teacher. And I enjoyed it so much, I expanded. I actually got to create a whole program there, which was not only musical theater, but also acting and filmmaking. I taught three classes every day, and in every two-week cycle, we produced an original work of some fashion. And after that, we created the New York Summer Music Festival in 2006 as a brand new summer music camp. And I was sort of the warden of all the traditions. I was the only person who had been there almost from the beginning. And I maintained the original spirit of the camp as hard as I could, where the idea is that everybody gets to play and everybody learns from everybody else. This goes back to my original experience as a trumpeter there. I was a pretty bad trumpeter when I first got there at age 14, but I got to play next to a kid who was only 16 at the time, who wound up being one of the primary trumpeters on Broadway for the past 25 years. And just standing next to him for 6 weeks, I got good enough to get into the Crane School of Music. So that's the sort of magical transformation that I thought the camp should be dedicated to being.
Well, we all are so proud, and so we've benefited in this region so much from the vision that Amy and John have had in creating, founding the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society. And to celebrate 10 years, we all want to come together and thank them for their efforts, because we all know, you know, of course, what it takes to do anything like this in a nonprofit way. But the fact that they experienced a need, and then they just didn't talk about it, but they followed through, and then they've continued to bring people like you to our midst to experience the highest level of performing, no matter what the medium is. And I just want to ask somebody who's on the other coast to look back at Northeastern Pennsylvania, and what would you say to them in terms of congratulating them and encouraging them to keep it up, and what something like this means in our world today?
Well, it is truly an extraordinary accomplishment of them to have created this organization and to have kept it going for 10 solid years. Running a big music camp, it was always a financial concern. I actually worked for 4 solid years there without taking a cent in salary, because we had to conserve every cent that we could and put it back into the camp to make sure it could keep going and keep serving the vision that we wanted. The fact that these two have done it without a large system, they've done it without an actual sponsorship with a large college or a performance hall, the fact that they've done it all by themselves is simply extraordinary. And they are to be commended for their passion and their dedication to doing this in an area where I know chamber music is not the biggest draw. I know that you've got Scranton Rail Riders, and any day they're going to outdraw a Chamber Music Society concert at the Kirby Center, which is unfortunate, because the chamber music they produce and that they perform is really, it's at the very, very highest performance level. And in your area, all of Northeast Pennsylvania, is very lucky to have people like John and Amy giving their skills and giving their talents to the whole community without a thought to themselves for so long, and continuing to do so for the indeterminate future. Bravo and bravo to them both.
I just want to say I'm always so appreciative of our guests, artists that come, that are willing to take time out of their busy lives to literally get on a plane and come across the country and be with us in Northeastern PA.
We had as guests in our studio violinist John Vida and violist Amy Iwazumi, co-founders of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, this year marking its 10th anniversary with a special musical theatrical performance of The Soldier's Tale by Igor Stravinsky, L'Histoire du Soldat, this Friday evening at 7, and that's going to take place in Kingston across the river from Wilkes-Barre at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts, 260 North Sprague Avenue. There will be special guests coming from hither and yon, and as we heard, the narrator will be Hollywood actor Keisuke Ohashi, who will come in from California. And the wonderful part about the piece that is based on a Russian folktale is that it brings together live chamber music, dramatic narration, dance, and puppetry, and you'll have a chance to have an experience. It's a wonderful place because the Kirby Center is geared for just such an intimate chamber-like performance. It is Friday, May 15th at 7 o'clock, the Kirby Center for Creative Arts, 260 North Sprague Avenue in Kingston, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre. And for more information, on the web, nepacms.org. nepacms.org. That's the 10th anniversary season of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society presenting its most ambitious production yet, Igor Stravinsky's The Soldier's Tale, blending live chamber music, dramatic narration, dance, and puppetry. And you'll have a chance to hear clarinet, bassoon, cornet, trombone, percussion, violin, double bass, and you'll see choreography by Bernadine Voitko and direction by Jason Sherry. And the event is sponsored in part by a grant from the Luzerne Foundation and by the Armature and Pennsylvania Council on the Arts.